Begin the current daf Masech the site the daf Mem Dal. Begin 11 lines down from the top of the Yamid, where the Gemara continues quoting from our Mishnah, where we spoke about three different exemptions that apply to people that are heading out to fight the war with the Jewish for the Jewish people. And they are, as we mentioned in the two previous exemptions, which are someone that's Bana Bayis, V'loi Chanochai, or he was not to Kerem, V'loi Chiloloi. And now our Gemara goes on to explain the third exemption from the Mishnah, which is, as the Pasuk says, Miho Isha She'iris Isha B'chulu, where the announcement is made when they come to the border, who is the man that has engaged a woman and has not consummated the relationship yet. So the Gemara brings Tarbon Gwinda Braisa that it elaborates on the different components of this halacha. The Pasuk says, Asha Eris. Who is the man that got engaged? So on that explains the Braisa, as we mentioned on Mishnah, Echad Hama'aris says, Abasula. This applies whether he's engaged to a virgin, Vechad Hama'aris says, Amana, whether he's engaged to a widow, Vechad Shemeres Yob, and this is even if it's just a woman, his sister-in-law, that's anticipating Yibum, where he didn't even get engaged to her. Rather, it's coming to him from what's invested to him from his brother's previous marriage. Or Vafil Chamisha Achen Umis Echen Men B'Mochamo. Even if there's five brothers and one of them dies at war, Kulon Chayzun, they all come back, even including all these brothers, because potentially any one of these brothers is the Yavam, so they are all included in this exemption of coming back from fighting the war. Now, moreover, the Pasuk, Loi Lokach, V'loi Lekocha. In other words, it doesn't say Loi Lokach, that who's the one that got engaged and didn't take, and it says rather, and they didn't take her. What do you mean, her? Of course we're talking about her, we're talking about the woman that he's engaged to. So that Lekocha, the extra hey, is saying some type of exclusionary term to exclude, as we mentioned in the previous two exemptions regarding the building of the house, that we said we're excluding someone that steals a house, or regarding not the Kerem, which we said if, let's say, the grafting is one of Isser. Here also what we're talking about, what we're excluding is, yes, if you're engaged and you didn't get married yet, then you're going to be exempted only if it's a permitted union, not if it's forbidden. That is Prat that comes to exclude, as our Mishnah said, Laman L'Kohen Gadol, if a widow is engaged to a Kohen Gadol, again, which is a forbidden union, as is mentioned in the Torah, or Grusha V'Chalutz L'Kohen Hedyet, a woman that's divorced or had Chalitza done to her, who is engaged to a Kohen Hedyet, or Mamzeris in the Sina, which in the Sina are, where they're actually from the Givinim, which is one of the nations where that one from one of the Shiva Umayis that it's forbidden to keep them alive. The reason why they're called Nesinim is because, like the Pasuk said, Yeshua v'yitnim Yeshua l'chayt v'eitzim. Yeshua placed them to be the woodcutters, the woodchoppers, and that's why from Nesina of being placed. So if, let's say, a female illegitimate woman or a Nesina is engaged l'Yisrael to a Jewish man, or the other way around, Bas Yisrael, a Jewish woman, is engaged l'mamzul l'nasin. Either one of these are forbidden unions. They would not allow the one who's going out to fight in the war to be exempted to come back. Now, that the Gemara says, Lema, let us say that the halacha that being mentioned in our Mishnah, which elaborated in this Braisa, that says that these men that are engaged to these women that are forbidden to them are not exempted because of that halacha of Asha Eris, is the like Rabbi Yisrael Glili. Obviously, it's not like Rabbi Yisrael Glili. Why? Because the Rabbi Yisrael Glili, if it's like Rabbi Yisrael Glili, which we're going to see in the coming Mishnah, Ha'amar, he says in definition, he explains, when the Pasuk says that they make the announcement that Hayari Varacha Levav, whoever's afraid and soft of heart, should go back home, he translates that as, not in a physical way, but rather, Zeha Mesiari Ma'afir Shabiyad, there's someone that's afraid from the sins that it's in his hands, in a spiritual way, that the person is afraid of these things, that causes him to go back home. So therefore, as the Gemara, seemingly the halacha of saying that these men are engaged in sin, that that's not valid for them to go home, what do you mean? You're right that maybe that won't be included of Asha'iris, but they should go home just because of the fact that they're engaged in sin. And that itself is considered Yari V'racha Levav. Obviously, this Tana is not like a B'Yisak Lili. So I think Gemara says, no, I feel it to be B'Yisak Lili. You could even say that this halacha is like a B'Yisak Lili. Could the Rabbi, like Rabbi says, because the Amar Rabbi explains, Lo'ilam Ein L'chayim. A person is not liable. In other words, there's no sin in the engagement with, let's say, a monarch to Kohen Gadol or Grusha V'chutz to Kohen Hedyet, Atshe Yivol, until there's cohabitation. In other words, until this man causes either his children or the woman that he's cohabiting with to come to a state of chil, to be desecrated. Now, Rashi points out one thing, that what the Gemara is addressing here is not regarding, let's say, the case of Mamzeris or Nesina. Because there, obviously, there's no sin in just being engaged, because there the Pasuk doesn't warn you Lo Yikach, that which would connote Kedushin. It just says Lo Yavai, which would be talking about Bia, or Lo Tischatin, which is consummating the relationship. But rather, what we're discussing over here is the case, let's say, of Aman L'Kohen Gadol, whereby Har it says Lo Yikach, the Kohen shouldn't take. Now again, the word Kicha always connotes Kedushin, engagement. That's what Rabbah has to address to say that actually the Isser is not from the moment of Kedushin, rather it's only when he consummates the relationship, as Rabbah explains. Because the Pasuk, there's two Pasukim near each other, and from that Rabbah learns out this idea where Matam Lo Yikach. What's the reason why the Pasuk says in Yikach of Aleph Pasuk Yudalin? Amana Ugrusha B'chalolo Zayna, that a widow or divorcee or a woman that's a halala or a zayna, a harlot, that all of them lo yikach, he shouldn't marry. Mishum, the reason is like the next pasuk says, which is v'lo yichal, because he shouldn't desecrate, as the pasuk there says, zare ba'amav, his children or his wife. Now mishum hachi ina lo yikach yivol. That's what Rabbi says. That's why you actually don't get malchus for this forbidden relationship until you actually have cohabitation, and therefore, hence, consequently, for what we're discussing over here is the same thing, that you wouldn't be chayzim arich ha-mulchama, A, because it's not considered a valid kosher marriage to be considered asha'iris isha. And moreover, although we ask, but according to Rabbi Yisrael Glili, forget about that component, but just the fact that you have committed a sin should be considered yar v'racha levav, and because aver should be yod, you should go back home. And that is what we're saying, no, because he's just engaged to her, just being engaged for all these cases is not considered having committed yet the sin, which is why you don't get malchus yet, and therefore you wouldn't be chayzim arich ha-mulchama by being engaged to this forbidden woman. Tanabon, when the Braisa, now culminating the summation of these three exemptions that we mentioned, so the Braisa says an interesting idea. The chronology of how it's mentioned the exemptions from fighting the war, first it mentions Ashabana, who's the one that has built the house and has not is inaugurated yet. Then it says Ashanata, who's the one that has planted a vineyard and has not deconsecrated yet. And then it says Asha'eris, who's the man that's engaged and has not consummated their relationship yet. So that says the Braitza, Limda Teira Derech Eretz. The Torah is teaching you what's a proper conduct, which is, first, Yivna Adam Bayis, a person should first build a house. V'yita Kerem, and plant the vineyard. V'achach Yisi Isha, and then he should go ahead and marry a woman. And this is exactly how Shlomo HaMelech says it in his wisdom in the Sefer Mishlei. It says, "Hachin b'chutz malach, prepare your work on the outside, ve'atada b'sadalach, and prepare what you need in your field. Achar v'nisa v'esach, and then go ahead and build your house." What does that mean? So, "Hachin b'chutz malach, prepare your work from the outside." Zeh bayis. That's the house that is what protecting on the outside. Ve'atata basadalach, and prepare what you need in your field. Zekerim, that's a reference to the vineyard. Achar, benisa v'isech, then go ahead and build your house. What does this mean? This doesn't mean the physical house. Rather, zu'isha, this is the woman, as it's mentioned elsewhere, that he called his wife, Ishti, Basi, it's my house. In other words, she's akeres habayis. That's what it means, go ahead and build your house. You want to first be prepared to have everything, and then get married. Or the v'achar, or another interpretation on a more spiritual interpretation of the pasuk, Hachin b'chutz malachtecha, prepare your work on the outside, zem mikra. That's the chumash, that's the psukim again, which is the more external part of the Torah. Va'atata basadalach, and then you prepare what you need in your field, zem mishnah. This is the learning of the mishnah. Achar v'nisa v'esecha, then you go and you build your house, zem gemara. That's a reference to gemara, again, which gemara is the logic and the understanding of the reasoning of the core text of the Torah Shabbat Peh, which is what the Mishnah is, and also who does the halacha follow, that's the deeper depths, then you're building your house. Or the va'achar, a different interpretation, Hachem machutz malachtecha, prepare your work from the outside, ze mikra u'mishnah, that's a reference to Chumash and Mishnah, Torah Shabbat Ksav and Torah Shabbat Peh. Then va'atata basad alach, then prepare your field, ze gemara, that's getting to the depth of that. And then achar v'nisa v'esecha, then go ahead and build your house. What's the culmination, what's the building of the house? Elomaisim Tavim, those are the acts, those are good acts of good deeds. Because that's exactly what the purpose of the whole learning is, to then perfect the person through that knowledge. Rabbi Lezer ben Noy, Rabbi Yisrael Glili, I mean, he says, Pay your work from the outside. Mikra or Mishnah Ugama. That's all learning. Chumash, Mishnayis, Gemara. Then when it goes on, it says, prepare what you need in your field. That's Ilum Aisim Tovim. That's good deeds. And then when it says, Achar Menisa Vesecha, and then go out and build your house, that's Darush V'Kibolschar. That's to expound the words of the Torah and to receive reward. That's after you know everything. But then you're expounding in that depth. That's already the highest level of Achar Benisa Besecha. Now, resuming the discussion of our Mishnah, we said, Ve'elu she'enu chayzim. So there are certain people that we said that are chayzim, are chayzim, as we mentioned. Then there are those that they're not, although they're in those categories, they're, it's not sufficient for them to be exempted from the war. For example, we said, Abayna Be'ishar, we said, if let's say someone builds somewhat of a house, but it's not a real house, it's a house by the gateway, which is just where the watchman stays, that's not really something that's meant for dwelling, that's where people come in and out. And again, the Mishnah mentioned many different exemptions. But the Chulu, etc., actually what the primary point of this Gemara is going on, is a later statement in the Mishnah of Rabbi Huda, who he said another one that's not going to be Chayzim or Chamochama, is even if someone built a whole new house, but it's only because he had a standing house, he demolished it and then rebuilt it exactly to its previous dimensions, that's not considered a new house to have him be to be exempted from fighting the war. Now, Tana, however, we learned in the Braisa, Im Haysev by Dimus Echel, even if he adds on just one more row of stones, of bricks, than there was before, either in the height or in the width, then that's not called, as Rabbi Huda had called it, Al Machine, exactly on its previous place. Rather, that would be called a new house. And Chayzer, that would have him returned from having to fight in the war. Now, the Mishnah also said, Rabbi Yezoimer, he says, even if someone builds a house made out of bricks in the area of Eretz Yisrael called the Sharon, he would not be returned from fighting in the war. So the reason is, because they have to constantly renew, in other words, to rebuild this house, which doesn't last, two times every 7 years, which is the Shemitah cycle, so since it's not long-lasting, it's not considered, quote, a house which would exempt the person from having to fight in the war. Then the Mishnah continued and said, Ve'elu she'in zazen b'mekayman, and these are those that they don't even leave from their place, which is in contrast to the previous cases that we had mentioned, by building the house and by planting the vineyard and by being engaged, where we said that although they're exempted, but they have to first go to the boundaries. And then even when they're exempted, they have to be involved somewhat in the war effort. Those are people that, because they never consummated, they never inaugurated, they never deconsecrated. But these people don't even have to leave their place, and not involved whatsoever in the war effort. And that's, for example, Bona Bayis Chodesh V'Chonche V'Chulu. If he built a new house and he actually inaugurated, but he didn't get a chance to spend a year with it, so too he actually consummated his relationship with his wife, but he didn't get to spend an entire Shana Rishayna. Those are people that since he already started, but he didn't finish the whole fourth year of the fruits, so then he doesn't even have to leave his place. So the Gemara brings Tarbon and the Braisa that elaborates on these halachas. When it says in the Pasuk, Isha Chadasha, says these ideas that who's the man that planted its vineyard and did not deconsecrate it, and it says also if someone is engaged to Isha Chadasha, to a new woman. So on that says the Braisa, Einli Eli Isha Chadasha, I would only know that if he's engaged to a new woman, meaning a besula, a virgin, on some level she's like a new woman, a new wife. Almana v'grusha, but a widow or a divorcee, meaning from a different man. And now this one is marrying that woman, minayin, from where we know that this would be included in the exemption. Tamalema isha, that's what the pasuk says, a woman, mikamakam, whatever woman it is that he's getting engaged to. Now, imke matamalema isha chadasha, and why does it say a new woman, if it's not even a new woman? So that's what the answer is. Misha chadasha loy has to at least be new to him. That excludes someone that remarries a woman that he was once married to, which that's not new to him and it's not new at all, and therefore that would be excluded from the exemption. But again, since it says Isha, doesn't say it has the word Isha first on its standing on its own, it's any woman. And again, chadasha just qualifies it has to be at least new to him. Now, Tanya Bar learned the Braisa, that which is in regards to this halacha that we mentioned in the Mishnah, which we just quoted, that there are those that don't even leave their place whatsoever. The Pasuk says in Dvarim Chav Dalet, Pasuk Hey, it says, Ki yikach ish isha chadasha, that if a man will take a new woman, so the Pasuk there says, Lo yetzi batzav, he doesn't go out to fight in the army. Now, says the Braisa, Yochel bat Tzavu hu delo yotze, you would think that he, okay, doesn't go out to fight with the army. Avol yasbik mayim amazni misakam adrachim. But he would do like the other ones that we mentioned, which is that when you're engaged and didn't yet get married, or like the other ones with the kerem and the bayis, that at least you have to at least provide the water and the food, and you have to fix the roads. But you just don't go out and fight the war. Tamalema, that's what the pasuk there teaches. That no, nothing. You don't pass anything over him for anything. This person is totally uninvolved. He doesn't leave from his place. Now, Yochosh on the Merabbas, it says the Baisa, so you would think you would include Afa Boina Bayis, also someone that builds a new house, and didn't yet even inaugurate it. Or not a Kambalechillai, or if he planted a vineyard and didn't deconsecrate it. Or Eris Isha Loilakacha, or if he engaged a woman and didn't yet even marry her yet, that should be the same thing, that they should be totally exempted. Which is, again, this is the point that we're defining in our Mishnah, which is about what the Bryce is elaborating and differentiating. Tamulema Allah. That's why the Pasuk says regarding the person that has already married the woman, and he just didn't get time to spend, like that Pasuk says in Devarim Chavdalad, the whole Shana Echas, the whole what we call Shana Rishayin, the whole year spending with her. Tamulema Allah, it's only regarding him that he doesn't leave his place. Allah Yatamaver, Aval Atamaver Al Kherim, but other people where, yes, although they are exempted, but they're not fully exempted, as we mentioned the differences before. They have to go to the border, and they have to be involved somewhat in the war effort. The Braisa concludes, Ama'achar, the cost of Layavar. So if the Pasuk already says that you can't involve anything in the war effort, even like the other exemptions, which have to at least give food and to fix the roads, so Layetzibat Sabalomali, then why do I need to say the beginning part of the Pasuk that it doesn't go out to fight in the war? Obviously, if he's not even fixing the roads or giving food, he's not fighting on the front lines. So that says the Braisa, Lavar Lav B'Shnei Lavan. It's that he should actually be violating two negative prohibitions. If he just helps out in the war effort, he violates one. If he even goes out to fight in the army, then he's actually violating two negative prohibitions. Nothing more continues with the next Mishnah. Again, continuing on this theme of the previous Mishnahs, which are this idea about what is halacha by when Jewish people fight the war, which is the title of this parak of Meshuach Mochama, which he's the one that's anointed and he makes all these declarations. However, the Pesukim continue and it says, the Yasvu HaShaitrim, that, and we mentioned that there were three different phases in the statements. First is what the Kohen says and he announces, then is what the Kohen says and the officers announce, and then is what the Shaitrim say and they announce, which is what we're discussing over here, the Yasvu HaShaitrim. These are the words of the officers that they add on more than what the words of the Kohen themselves say, which is Ladabra La'am, to talk to the people, V'gomer, etc. Where the Pasuk says, and this is in Devarim, Perek Chav, Pasuk Ches, that says they speak to the people, V'amr, and they say, Miho ish hayare v'rach alev, who is the man that's afraid and he's soft of heart? Yelech v'yashav l'veset, let him go back home, v'lo yimas es levav echa kilvavan, and he shouldn't melt the hearts of his brothers like his own heart. Get away, we need to be strong altogether. If you're not holding up to it, then go back home. So this is what the Shaitrim add on to what the Kohen Meshuach Mochama says. But there's a machleik, is exactly what does it mean that he's afraid and soft of heart? So Rabbi Kiva, he says, Hayar v'rach alev, when it means to say that he's afraid and soft of heart, means k'mashmai, the way the simple understanding of it is, she'ini yoch lamed b'kirsha mochama, this guy can't stand, the literally definition means the knot of the war, meaning when the people, the army is tightly standing together, like almost knotted together, that the enemy shouldn't separate them. He can't take that pressure. And Baliris Cherev Shlufa, he can't see an unsheathed sword that's stretched out and glittering. He can't take that type of a situation. Basically, I mean, he says it more of a spiritual level. Hayar v'rach alev, it means to say someone that's afraid and is soft of heart. Zehu ha-misyari min aver shabiyadeh, this is someone that's afraid of the sins that he has. Such a person is not confident that Hashem is there to help him because of his sins. He should go home. Now, says Rabbi Yisrael Glil Lefikach, therefore, because as we just defined that Yari means someone that's afraid of his sins, Tolsa Leha Torah es kol elu, that's why the Torah gave a few different exemptions from leaving the army, which are benign, nothing wrong if you built a house, or if you planted a vineyard, or if you're engaged. Sheyachze Beglolon, that under that guise, this person can go back home and that he won't be embarrassed that why are you going home? Obviously you're a sinner. So no one knows that. Maybe he built a house, or maybe he planted a vineyard, or maybe he's engaged, as to cover for this person who is really going home because of his sins. Now, Rabbi Yisim, he says, Amon l'kayin gadol, if you have a widow that's engaged to a kohen gadol, or grusha b'chalutz l'kayin hedid, or a divorcee, or a woman that had chalutza from a brother-in-law, when her husband died without any children, that's engaged to a kohen hedid. Or mamzeres from the sin of Yisrael, or if you have an illegitimate woman, or a woman from the givonim, that's engaged to a Jewish man, or the other way around, pas Yisrael mamzel nasan, harehu hayar v'rachalev, that is what the category means, when he's afraid and he's soft of heart, which the Gemara is going to explain what is the difference between what Rabbi Yisi is saying now and what Rabbi Yisi Glili just said. Seemingly, they're both giving the interpretation of someone that's afraid of sins, which would include an inappropriate and sinful engagement of like a mon l'kayin gadol. Now, the Pesukim continue and say, so when it is that the officers finish speaking to the people, that then they appoint the leaders of the army at the head of the people. Now the Mishnah adds on, not only do they put officers like lieutenants up there in front of the army, but ubakevich alam, they also put officers in the back of the army, which is that they should stand there, that those in the back should not start fleeing, as the Mishnah explains, mamidin zikifin lufneim, towards the front of the army they place mighty officers that are appointed for the job, that if one of the people who are fighting on the front lines falls down, that they should help him get up, and they should strengthen him with their motivating words. That's why you have officers up in the front. Now, v'acheirim, you have other men, me'achareim, that are in the back of the squad, v'chashilin shel barzel b'yidein, and there are axes of iron that are in their hands to make sure that no one is fleeing, and v'chal mavakash lachza, and if anyone seeks to go back, so this officer has the permission to chop off that person's legs. Now, what's the reason for that? As the Gemara continues, as the Mishnah continues, Amud Beis, shetchilas nis nafila, because the beginning of fleeing is the downfall, which the Gemara actually will ask, it's the other way around. It's actually that because fleeing is the beginning of the downfall, not that the downfall is the beginning of the fleeing. Now, shenema, which it's, as it says the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, Nasi Yisrael of Nepalish, and we find that the Jewish people were fleeing from the Philistines. And guess what happens? That there was a great plague amongst the people. Again, this idea, because once you start running, that's the beginning of the downfall. Well, halanu oimer, and similarly it says later on in Shmuel Aleph, says ve'inushu anshi Yisrael of Nepalish, that the Jewish men were fleeing from before the Pelishtim. And ve'yiplu chalol magrim, and again, there were many corpses that were falling. This idea where once you start retreating and you start fleeing, that's when the downfall is. So they don't want anyone retreating without permission from the general, from what the concept is, what they're trying to do in fighting the war. Now, going back to what we said before in the Mishnah qualifies, when did we say in this Mishnah and the previous Mishnah that those that are exempted from fighting in the war, and there are those that actually don't even leave their place, that's b'mochames harishus. That is, if you're fighting a voluntary war. But if it's a mitzvah war, for example, like in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, when they had to conquer Eretz Yisrael, Hakol Yaitzin, everybody goes out to fight the war. Even the groom from his room, and the bride from her bridal canopy, from her wedding canopy, everybody goes out and helps in the war effort. Now, Amr Behuda, he says a different version. He qualifies and says, when do we say that those that are exempted and don't fight? That's b'mechemes mitzvah. That's by a mitzvah war. B'mechemes chayva, but in an obligatory war, again, the same idea, kol yitzin, everyone goes out, afel achasa mechadra v'kam achapasa, even the groom and the bride, which Gemara doesn't explain what's the difference between Rabbi Behuda and the Tanakama. It sounds like they're really saying the same thing. It's just that one is calling it reshus, and the other one's calling it mitzvah, and then regarding the one that everyone goes out, one's calling it mitzvah, and the other one's calling it chayva. But first the Gemara addresses, as we alluded to, ma'ika ben Reb Yisi le Reb Glili. What's the difference between Reb Yisi and Reb Glili? Seemingly they're both interpreting, not like Reb Akiva, that hayar v'racha leivav means to say that you're afraid of your sins. So now the Gemara says, ike benayu aver d'rabbanan. The difference between them is when you violate a rabbinic sin, which according to Reb Yisi Glili, he said any sin that the person has, which would even be a rabbinic sin, that would have you go back and not fight in the war. Whereas Rabbi Yisi, that he, as we see as the case that he specified, is only if you violated a biblical commandment, which is like the case of Amon L'Kohen Gadol, where again, as Rashi explains, it has to be talking about that you already married the Amana, because as we mentioned previously, that only then is there the Isser, but as Rabbi explains, if you only engaged, you didn't violate the Isser yet, but if you already consummated that relationship, then you have violated a biblical Isser. That's what Rabbi Yossi says, that's how you're a Baracha Levav of the Aveir Shabayadai, but however, he argues in Rabbi Yossi clearly it's not by a rabbinic violation, whereas Rabbi Yossi clearly says even that would be considered a Yare Baracha Levav. Now, based on this, the Gemara says, Kaman Ozla Hadatanya. So which one of these is like the following brisa? Says sach bein tefillah letefillah. If someone talks between putting on his tefillin shal yad and the tefillin shal resh, which he puts on his head, averi hi biyad. If someone talks in between that, so that's a sin. And Rashi qualifies that it's a sin only if he doesn't go ahead and then make a new bracha on his tefillin shal resh, which as the Gemara says in Maseches Menachos, Daf Lamed Vav Min Aleph, that if someone talks between the tefillin shal yad and tefillin shal resh, he has to make a separate bracha on the tefillin shal resh. So here, but it's only if you don't talk that you make one bracha, which the custom of minig Ashkenaz is to make two brachas anyway. But according to the primary halacha, is that you make one bracha on both. If you talk between, then you make two. So if someone only made one bracha and spoke in between the tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel resh, it's a sin. And v'chayzur aleh marcha machama says the brisa, that is enough of a sin to have him come back and not fight in the war effort. So the Gemara says, come on, who's that like? That's Kirbius Aglil again, who he says it doesn't have to be a biblical violation to be considered any type of sin which have you be chayzer or chamachama. Continuing on this theme of man tan al hada tan rabbanan, relating to the halacha of our Mishnah, who would be the tan of the following brisa? The brisa says shama kol kronas v'hirtiyah. If there's a soldier that hears the sound of the trumpets that they're blowing and he shakes, or hagafas trisin v'hirtiyah, or he hears the banging of their shields and he's shaking, or tzichtzua charavis, or there's the glittering and the clanging of their swords, umayim shoysnoi alberkav, and there's water dripping on his legs, meaning he's urinating because he's so afraid, says the brisa chayzer. So such a person, he has to go back, he can't fight in the war. Says the Gemara, Kaman, who would that be going like? Leim Rebbe Kiva, he v'loy b'yisei gluli. Let's say that's like Rebbe Kiva of our Mishnah, who he translated Hayur v'rach levav, literally, somebody that's afraid of fighting in the war, which is scary, and not like Rebbe Yisei gluli, because he interpreted it in the spiritual level, not on the physical dimension. So he seemingly would not hold that would be problematic. And then the Gemara says, no, b'ha afil Rebbe Yisei gluli, even Rebbe Yisei gluli would agree that if somebody's shaking or he's urinating because he's so afraid, that such a person is not fighting in the war. And the reason is Mishum Nechsib, because it says at the end of that pasuk, after it says Hayur Baracha Levav, it says V'liyimas is Levav Echav Kilvavavai, because he shouldn't melt his brother's hearts like his own heart. Look, you're not up to it. Don't make other people feel insecure because they see you shaking and they're going to start thinking, oh my, maybe this is something scary. That's why such a person has to go back. And even Rabbi Yisrael Gluli would agree to that, because yes, Hayur Baracha Levav is when it's internal, no one sees. That's from the spiritual dimension. But if you're shaking like a leaf and you're urinating, that's something which you're going to make everyone else feel insecure, and therefore, even he would agree that person would be chayzim or chamachama. Now the Mishnah said, v'hayi kekalois ha-shaytrim achulu, that the pasuk says, when the shaytrim finished, so then they would go ahead and have officers in the front, officers in the back, and so on. Now the officers in the back, we said, are because, as the Mishnah said, we don't want anyone fleeing when they're in the middle of fighting the war, because as the Mishnah said, shetchilas nisin afila, because the beginning of fleeing is the downfall. Now, the Gemara asks, hay mipnei shetchilas nisin nefila, this that it says in the Mishnah, because the beginning of nisa, of fleeing, is downfall, to the contrary, mipnei shetchilas nefila nisa mibayle, because the beginning of the downfall is fleeing is what it should have said. In other words, because the understanding of tchila sounds like, well, what is the cause? And therefore, it should have said, when they're fleeing, that's the beginning and the cause of the downfall. Because as Rashi explains, regarding, you can't translate it as that tchilas nisa, when you start, when you're in the beginning of fleeing, that caused the downfall, because fleeing is something that there's no beginning. You're either fleeing or you're not. You're not starting to flee. The second you start moving away, you're fleeing. So you can't say it as tchilas nisa, as the beginning of the fleeing. Rather, it would be translated as if it's the cause. The cause of fleeing is downfall. The cause that tchilas nisa is nefila, that the cause of fleeing is downfall. It's not. That's not the truth. It's the cause of downfall. It's fleeing. So Emor, rather the Gemara amends the text of our Mishnah, it should read Mnishatchilas Nefila Nisa, because the cause, again not beginning, but rather in the translation of cause, the cause of the downfall is fleeing, and that's why they have officers in the back to stop people from fleeing and causing the downfall by fleeing. Now then the Mishnah qualified. When did we say this, that there are those who are exempted and those that don't even leave their place? That's by Mechemes Rishus, the Tanakhama, the Rabban said, that's by a voluntary war, but by a mitzvah war, everyone goes out. Now, there was another version of Rabbi Huda, which seemingly sounded like the same thing, just he was using a different vernacular. He said, when did we say this, there are exemptions? By a mitzvah war. But by a chayva war, obligatory war, then everyone goes out. So Amar Yechon Yechonen clarifies and he explains. He says, Rishus Dirabbanan. Regarding that war that the Chacham said is a voluntary war, which that's the type of war that a chassan doesn't have to go out and those that are exempted, Zuhi Mitzvah Rabbi Yehuda, that's exactly what Rabbi Yehuda was saying, what he was calling in the category of what's called a mitzvah, where Rabbi Yehuda also agrees that a chassan doesn't have to go out and fight that war. The only difference between them is that Rabbi Yehuda is calling that war a mitzvah war, and the Rabbanan are calling it a rishus war. Now, what's the difference of what you're calling it? If they both agree who can go out and who doesn't have to go out. The difference is regarding, are you exempted at that time from doing other mitzvahs that you're involved in, as Rava will later explain. Because if you're calling it a mitzvah, then you're being oisik by mitzvah. When you're oisik in a mitzvah, you're patim in a mitzvah. So everyone we both are calling it the same types of wars. It's two wars. One, there are exemptions, and one not. And everyone agrees to that criterion. Just Rabbanan calling it Rishus, and Rabbi Yehuda is calling it a mitzvah. Now, same thing is mitzvah Drabbanan. Regarding the war that Drabbanan called a mitzvah, which they say that everyone has to go out and fight, Duhi Chayvad Rabbi Yehuda. That's exactly what Rabbi Yehuda would say, that everyone has to go out and fight. It's just that, again, he's calling it an obligatory war. Now, regarding this category, Rashi explains that there actually is no chiddush in the differential of terms per se, if you're calling it mitzvah or chayva. The only reason why we're calling this one mitzvah versus chayva is because of the first category, which is significant, as we're going to explain, of the Chacham calling it Rishos and Rabbi Yehuda calling it mitzvah. And that is because since the Rabbanan called the first category Rishos, so they only have to call the second category as a mitzvah, because even if you call it a mitzvah, that's also an obligation to do. The only thing is you have to call it a higher level than what we called Rishus, because everyone has to go out and fight that war. Because whereas regarding Rishus, there are those that are allowed to be exempted, so you call it one level higher. Now, but however, according to Yehuda, that he already called the first category as a mitzvah, and again, as we're going to explain, to teach you the concept of Eisiv mitzvah, Patim and mitzvah, even though on some level it's not a real Mechemes mitzvah, but it's called a mitzvah on some level, so he had to then go ahead and elevate the second category and call it a higher name more than the first one, because that, as we're saying, that everyone has to go out and fight that war, so that's why he calls it a chayva. But really, there's no significance in the fact that he calls it a chayva versus what the Rabban are calling it as a mitzvah. So Amar Rava, Rava comes to explain this teaching of Rabbi Yechanan that we just explained a little bit. And that he says that this Rabbi Yechanan came to explain the Machlekes Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda in the terms that they use regarding one of the wars, that there's different titles being called, which again, Rav is going to explain that the significance in that difference is regarding this concept of Iksi Mitzvah, Patam and Mitzvah, where again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're calling the first category in the Mitzvah, and according to Rabbanan, we're calling it a Rishus. So Rav comes to explain regarding which one is it that they're arguing about. So Rav explains, Melchemes Yeshua Lichbash. For example, let's say regarding the war that in the times of Yeshua ben Nun, when they were coming to conquer Eretz Yisrael, there no one's going to say that that's called a Mechemes Rishus. Divrei HaKol Chayva, there everyone would agree that it's considered an obligatory war. And since it's a chiyuv, so it's obviously a mitzvah. And like we say, ho'isi b'mitzvah patam in a mitzvah. If you're involved fighting that war, you're exempt from all other mitzvahs. And the Rabbanan just didn't bother calling it a chayva, an obligation, because as we mentioned before, it's enough for them to call it a mitzvah, which again stands in contrast to the first category, which is called a rishus. Because we don't have to call it anything more than just one level higher than the previous one. So again, calling it mitzvah in contrast to rishus has already elevated that status. Where again, everyone has to go out and fight that war, and it's also that you're even exempt from doing a mitzvah. Now, on the other end of this spectrum, Mechemes Beis David L'Ravacha, when David HaMelech fought wars just for purely for gain, which is when he fought by Aram Tzova, where that was just to add on to the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael and all the surrounding areas so that he can get taxes and other things from those lands, Devar HaKol Rishus. There, everyone would agree, even Rabbi Yehuda, that that war would not be called a Mechemes Mitzvah. It would be just considered a voluntary war. And if someone involved in fighting that war, he would not be exempt from doing a mitzvah. Now, Ki Palik, when did we have this machlokes between Yehuda and Rabbanan regarding this first category that we called either, like the Rabbanan called it, a Rishus, which is voluntary, or like Rabbi Yehuda who called it a mitzvah, which, again, according to Rabbi Yehuda that's calling it a mitzvah, you're going to be patur from the mitzvah, and according to the Rabbanan who called it a Rishus, you're going to be chayv in the mitzvah. That's a war that's lemi'ute evde kechavim deloilai se'alayu. It's just to diminish the populace of the idol worshippers that they shouldn't increase to be able to overpower us. Where mar kari la mitzvah, Rabbi Yehuda calls that war a mechames mitzvah. Umar kari la rishos, kari rishos, and the Rabbanan call it a voluntary war. Now nafkamina, what is the halachic difference? What you call it if they both agree anyways that who has to go out and fight that or not? Again, what wasn't mentioned is Mechemes Rishus, like David HaMelech fighting Aram Tzova, but everyone would agree that not everyone has to go out and fight, and moreover, you're not going to be even patur in a mitzvah. The other end of the spectrum, which is the second category that we call either Mechemes Mitzvah or Chayiv, it doesn't make a difference. Everyone has to go out and fight. You're Eisu Mitzvah, you're patur in a mitzvah. The first category mentioned, which we said, the qualifications of the previous Mishnah is that there are exemptions, which the Rabbanan are calling Mechemes Rishus, and if you're just calling it Mechemes Mitzvah, is regarding specifically like this case when it's to diminish the idol worshippers, where the Rabban hold that's voluntary, just like fighting other lands. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds a note that there's a mitzvah. It's not a chayva one, not everyone has to fight that one, but it's a mitzvah to diminish them, that they don't come to fight them. Now the significance of this is lo isu b'mitzvah, but someone that's involved in the mitzvah, shapatim in the mitzvah, that he's going to be exempt from the mitzvah. And again, is it considered that you're involved in the mitzvah when you're fighting these idol worshippers? Rabbi Yehuda considers that so. So even though not everyone has to fight in that war, which those he calls chayiv, again, contrast to what he's calling mitzvah, but since it's a mitzvah, so you can be exempt from other mitzvahs, which again, Rabban don't call it as a mitzvah. They call it also just a mechemes rishos, and therefore you wouldn't be exempt from other mitzvahs during the time that you're fighting this war. Hanulach Meshulach Mochama, we shall return to the 8th parak of Masech Desaita, parak Meshulach Mochama. And with that, we begin the 9th and final parak of Masech Desaita, parak Egla Rufa. Which again, this continues the same theme from 2 parakim ago, from the 7th parak, which again talks about, as we said, Elu Nemarim, that these are things that could be said in any language, versus those that have to be said specifically in Lashon HaKodesh. Egla Arufa, the decapitated calf, is in that same category of Lashon HaKodesh. It also has to have its sayings is specifically in Lashon HaKodesh. Now, Egla Arufa is when there's a dead person that's found on the road somewhere, not in the town. It's not clear how he died, who killed him. But the halacha is that we measure the closest town, and the elders from that town have to come and say, Yideinu lo shafchu, our hands did not spill this blood. So that statement that they say has to be said in Lashon HaKodesh. Moreover, the Kahanim come and they say, Kapal Amchi Yisrael, atone for your Jewish people. That also has to be say from, as it's written in the Torah, from the biblical words in Lashon HaKodesh. And again, then the process is, they take this calf, this egla, and they do arifa, they decapitate it from behind, and then they do this whole process, which is the atonement, until they find out who was the person that murdered this individual. So again, the procedure of the statements of Egla Rufa has to also be said in Lashon HaKodesh. Shem, like it says in Pasuk in Devarim, it says, Ki yimotze chol ba'adama, that if you find a corpse on the earth, so that is, as the Pasuk says afterwards, b'yotzu zekenecha b'sheftecha, and then your elders come out, and your rulers come out, which the Gemara is going to explain. Where do you see from this pasuk that what is said has to be said in Lashon HaKodesh? But be that as it may, the Mishnah explains when it says that your elders and your officers come out, it's shleisha mibezna hagadol shabi Yerushalayim hayoyitzin. Three of the dayanim, of the judges, of the great Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, they would come out, and the reason for their coming out was to measure from the corpse around to all the neighboring cities to see which is the closest city, because the closest city is the one that has to do this procedure of the Egla Arufa. Yehuda, he argues, and he says, Chamisha. It's not enough to have three of the Sanhedrin, you have to have five. Because, remember, like it says in the pasuk we just quoted, Zikeinecha, your elders, that's plural, that's two, Shnaim. V'sheftecha, when it says you officers, that's also plural, that's also shnaim, that's two. So 2 plus 2 is 4. Now, v'ein bezen shakal, the halacha is that you can't have a court that's equal numbered, because if there's a dispute, you might have 2 and 2, you're going to be stuck, a stalemate. You always have to have that there's going to be a majority. So meisiv and aleinu oidecha, we add another one. That's how we know that there's 5, not like the Tanakama who said that there's only 3. Moreover, regarding these halachas of Egla Rufa, the Mishnah continues, Nimtza Taman Begal. If, let's say, the corpse is found buried underneath a pile of rubble, meaning under a pile of bricks, Oy Tala Be'ilin, or if he's hanging from a tree, Oy Tzav Up in the Amayim, or he's floating underwater, Lo Haya Arifin. Then they wouldn't do the procedure of the Egla Rufa. Shneman, because, like it says in the Pasik, this is in Devarim, Perichav Aleph, both of Pasik Aleph and Beis. So it begins over there, it says, Ki matzi chol ba'damam, if you find a corpse on the earth, Hashem lekecha nois l'chol l'rishle, which Hashem your God has given to you to inherit, neifil ba'sadeh, where this corpse has fell on the field, lo noida mihiko, it's not known who killed him. So on that, the Mishnah explains, it says in the pasuk ba'adam on the earth, v'loi tamen begal, and not buried underneath a pile of bricks. Neifil, when it says that he fell, is v'loi talam be'ilan, he's not hanging from a tree. And when it says basad that he's on the field, is v'loy tzav up in the amayim, that he's not floating on water. Moreover, continues the mission of nimtza samach l'svar. If the dead person was found near the border, which the Gemara will explain the reason for all these halachas, oyli ish rubo ivdi gechavim, or if he's found near a city that the majority of the inhabitants are idol worshippers, oyli ish imba bezen, or he's near a city that there's no courts, lo hayu arfin, then they wouldn't do the procedure of egla rufa. And concludes the Mishnah, the measurement to see which is the city that does the procedure of Egla Rufa, who's the closest city, is only to a city that has a court. But if there's no Bezdin, then that city is not the one measured to do the procedure of the Egla Rufa. Now the Gemara asks, as we alluded to the question, my ka'amar, what does the Mishnah mean when it with its opening halacha that it said that the statement said regarding the procedure of Egla Rufa have to be said in Lashon HaKodesh, and it said Shenem, like it says in the Pasuk, Yimatzeh Chol Ba'adama? Where do you see from that Pasuk that the words being said have to be said in Lashon HaKodesh? So Amar Bevo says, no, Hachikama. This is what we're saying in the Mishnah. You're right, the actual source doesn't say in the Mishnah. Rather, Shenemar, it says in the Pasuk, in Devarim Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Zayin, it says, V'anu V'amru, that they pronounce and they say, these are the elders of the city which is closest to where the corpse was found. Yedeinu lo yishafchu es adam hazeh. Our hands has not spilled this blood. Now, ulahal noemer, and later on in Sefer Devarim, in a different context, it says, v'anu halavim v'amru b'goyimah, that the levim declare and they say, which is in regards to the curses and the blessings of who keeps and who doesn't keep the words of the Torah and how grizma are evil. So it, in both contexts, it has the terms anu and amru. So we make the following Gezeira Shava. Ma niyaham ulahalam balasha kaidish, just like over there, as we explained in the previous parak, that just like over there, Bahar Griz Mahar Abel, the words that were said were in Lashna Kaidish, Afkam Lashna Kaidish, also over here, by the Egla Rufa, the words that are being said have to be said in Lashna Kaidish. Now, that explains Rebbe Vo, that when the Mishnah then continues and it says Shenema, that actually is not going on the proof that the words by Egla Rufa are in Lashna Kaidish. Rather, the Seid de Egla Rufa Ketza. Now, the Mishnah is really coming to explain, so what is the procedures and the order of the decapitating of the calf? That's what the Mishnah then quotes from the Pasuk, Ki Matzich Chol Ba'adama, that if you find a corpse on the land, the B'yotzuz Yikenech V'Sheftecha, and then the Pasuk then continues after that, that, and then your elders and your officers come out, that's an opening for the next halacha of the Mishnah, which is Shloishim Ibez Nagoda Shabushlaim Hoyotzin, that there was 3 from the Sanhedrin of the great court that they would come out. That's what we see, because that's what the order, that's what we're coming to say. It opens up with what happens. And then it says your elders come out. That's a reference to the members of the Sanhedrin. Now the Mishnah quoted, however, that Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he argued on the Tanakam, and he says, no, Chamisha, Bukhulu, no, 5 members of the Sanhedrin come out, not just 3. So now the Gemara brings a Braisa that elaborates on this machlokes. Turn up and learn the Braisa. It says in the passage we just quoted, that your elders and your officers come out. So, says the first opinion, which we already quoted in the Mishnah, Zikinecha is plural, that's 2. Veshevtecha is plural, that's 2. That's also 2. Now, the aim bezin shakal, you can't have an equal court as we mentioned, because you can't have it that it's going to be stalemate. You have to have one that's a majority to fulfill the pasuk in Shemayis Chav Gimel Acher Ram Lahatlis. There has to be a majority that decides the law. So Meshivin Alein Laidacha. So we add on one more to that four. Harikan Chamisha. That's five members of the Sanhedrin that come out. That's the Rebbe Yehuda. Shimon Ami, he argues, as we saw in our Mishnah, he says no. Zikenecha Shnayim. It says your elders. That's two. Now Ve'im Bez and Shakal. You can't have an equal court. So Meshivin Alein Laidacha. You add on one more. Harikan Shleisha. That's three. Ask the Gemara, but Rabbi Shimon Nami, Oksiba Sheftecha, seemingly Rabbi Yehuda has a good point. It doesn't just say Zikinecha, to say 2 plus 1. It says also Sheftecha, which is another 2 plus the 1. So there should be 5, not 3. So the Gemara answers, Ahumi Boiler. Rabbi Shimon needs that statement of Sheftecha for a different drush. He doesn't have it to add on another 2 people to the Sanhedrin that come out. What does he use the word Sheftecha for? It comes to qualify which zikenecha come out for the measurements. It's lemiyuchadin shebeshiftecha. It's for those distinct ones of your rulers, of your judges, which are those from the lishkas hagazas, those judges which are in the chamber of hewn stone, which is a reference to Sanhedrin. That's why it said beshiftecha. Which judges is it? It's which zikenecha? It's those judges that are from the Sanhedrin, but it's not coming to add on another 2 more members. However, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda, however, mezikne zikenecha nafka. He learns out that it's from the Sanhedrin, from the word zikenecha, because it could have just said zikne. Why does it say zikenecha? Comes to say the distinct ones amongst your elders, which is a reference to Sanhedrin. So therefore he has v'sheftecha. Again, superfluous to tell you another 2 more members. But Rabbi Shimon, he would tell you, no. Ikas rachman is zikne. How the Torah only said zikne, the elders. Havamina, actually, I would have thought to say, I feel a zikne hashuk. It would mean even members, elder people that are just in the marketplace, even though they're not on any court. Kas rechman zekenecha, that's why the Torah writes, your elders. Now, because rechman zekenecha, the Torah only written your elders, have a minna filis and hedra ketana. I would have thought to say, yes, they obviously have to be on the Sanhedrin, on the courts, but could be on the lower courts, even let's say those of the 23 members. Kas rechman zekenecha, that's why Reb Shimon says, it says sheftecha to tell you, it's what type of elders, those that judge the entire Jewish people, it's lemiyuchadim shebeshiftecha, it's for the highest Sanhedrin, which is the Sanhedrin HaGadol, which is of the 71 members. So therefore, again, he doesn't have a sheftecha extra, he needs it to teach you, it's from the members of the great Sanhedrin. But the Gemara said, Rabbi Yehuda, however, gamar zikne zikne mizikne ha'eda. He learns that a gezeris shava, where here it mentions elders, and there, which is, it says by, when there's a par helam davar, which was when the entire Jewish people commits a sin based on the erroneous psak of the great court, which is they have to bring a par of helam davar, which because of this error, so regarding that smicha, the leaning on that carbon, it says that the zikne ha'elder, the elders of the assembly, they do the leaning on the animal. So Rabbi Yehuda learns, gzeir shava, ma lahalam yuchad nishbe'eda, just like over there, it has to be from the great Sanhedrin. Here also it's the distinct ones amongst the assembly, and therefore he already knows from the Gezer Shava of Zakin from there to here that it has to be the Sanhedrin HaGadol, and therefore he has Sheftecha as superfluous to teach you what he needed for, to add in another 2 more members, and therefore it's not 3 like Reb Shimon, rather it's 5 like Reb Yehuda says. Now however the Gemara asks on this interpretation of Reb Yehuda, E Gamer, if he learns Gezer Shava from Zikne Eida of the Smicha of Parhelm Dover to the term of zikinecha over here by the egla rufa, so ligmar lekula milsim hasim. Then she actually learned out all the halachic variables from that context. And the understanding of this question is because Rabbi Yehuda actually learns that by the smicha of the zikna eida on the parhelm davar shal tzibur actually has to be 5 members of the Sanhedrin, which as he learns out from Sukkim in the first parak of the Sanhedrin. So you already know 5 just from the gzeris shava. So then the question would be, Zekenecha v'sheftecha lamali, then why would Rabbi Yehuda need to understand that there's 5 members of the Sanhedrin that come out to do the procedure of Egla Rufa, because Zekenecha is 2 and Sheftecha is 2 and 2 plus 2 is 4 and you have to add on an odd number, that's why you have 5. What do you mean? If he has this Gzer Shava from Zikne Ha'eda over there, and that's is how, as you're explaining, he knows it has to be the members of the great Sanhedrin, but then you should extend the Gzer Shava even further. Then he should know, based on that Gzeir Shavi, even that there has to be 5. So why would you need Zikenecha Sheftecha for? So rather, the Gemara says, you're right. He actually does not learn Gzeres Shava. And he needs Sheftecha to teach, like Reb Shimon said, to teach you that it's the members of the Sanhedrin HaGadol. So then if he uses V'Sheftecha like Reb Shimon, so then how does he use V'Sheftecha to add in another two members? Rather, it's Vav V'Sheftecha Leminyan. It's the Vav of V'Sheftecha that Reb Yehuda expounds to tell you that, to tell you the metrics to add on another two more members. You're right, the word Sheftecha has to tell you Muchadin Sheftecha. It means that it tells you the members of the great Sanhedrin. But he still uses the word V'Sheftecha, which is extra Vav, that tells you an add-on to that, tells you something else, which that tells you that the pluralism of this word Sheftecha adds on two more members to Zekenecha, which takes the total member from 3 to 5. Whereas Reb Shimon, however, Reb Shimon, as we continue to talk about Aleph, Vav Loi Mashmalei, in this context he doesn't darshan, doesn't expound that the Vav comes to tell you an added members to the Sanhedrin that come out to do the measurement of the Egel HaRufa. Rather, as the Gemara brings here in parentheses, my Kamarachmana, what is the Torah telling you with the word Sheftecha? It's only teaching you the most distinct ones of your judges, which are a reference to the Sanhedrin HaGadol. Now, however, the Gemara concludes this discussion by asking, Ilmiyata, if that's the case that, like Rabbi Huda expounded, and even Rabbi Shimon did, it's just he used V'Sheftecha for something else, that any pluralistic terminology in the Pasuk comes to add on another two more members, and that's why you say Zikenecha and Sheftecha, oh, each plural term comes to add on another two more members. So then when the Pasuk there says in Devarim, where it says V'yatsu, and that they go out, which is this Pasuk recording of Zikenecha and Sheftecha, that's Shnayim, that's a pluralistic term, they go out, that's two also. Then when the Pasuk continues Umadadu, that they measure, where the Pasuk there concludes El Ha'or Mash Asivivo Yisachalul, to the cities that are surrounding this dead person, that's also a plural term, which should also add on Shnayim another two. So therefore asks the Gemara, Lirabi Huda, according to Bihuda, that already has 5, Hare Kantisha, you actually have 9 now, because 5 plus 4 is 9, because you have 2 more terms of plural terms, which each one's 2. And Lirabi Shimon, Hare Kant Sheva, according to Rabbi Shimon, that you had 3 already, so you're adding another 4, that's 7. So why are we saying that they hold it 5 and 3? It should be 9 and 7 respectively. So the Gemara answers, Hahumi Baile. You're right, but they need those terms to give different drashas, and that's why they're not superfluous to add on as pluralistic terms for two more members. Look at the town, like Lena Raisa. It says V'yatu, that they go out. That's not a superfluous term of two more. Rather, it's coming to teach a distinct halacha. They go out, which is Hein B'lesh Luchain. The members of the Sanhedrin HaGadol themselves have to come down, and they can't send an agent to take care of the measurement. And Umadadu, when it says, and they measure, comes to tell you, Shafila Nimtza Ba'alil La'ir. Even if it's clear and pretty obvious that there's no closer city than this city over here, Hayumaydidin, that they would measure, and that's why it says Umadadu, that they would measure, to tell you, Shemitza Lasik B'Medida. There's an actual mitzvah to be involved in the measurement. So even if it's obvious and you don't have to measure, oh, that's definitely close to the city. No, it says umadada, that they should measure, to tell you that there's a mitzvah specifically to measure. And that's why it says these two terminologies, and that's why they can be used to add on to the pre-existing metrics of Zikenecha, which is like Reb Shimon learned, which is 2 plus 1, or like the way Rabbi Huda said of Zikenecha v'Sheftecha, which is 2 plus 2 and 1, which would make it for the Machlekes of either 5 Sanhedrin that come out, or 3 of the Sanhedrin that come out to measure from the corpse to the closest city.